I'll give you a 3, 2, 1 and we can go.
Wait, Jennifer, open the chips now because, okay. We couldn't pick quiet snacks, Jennifer. Yeah, Doritos. Okay, thank you. Jesus Christ.
Crunch. No, I'm kidding.
Alyssa, I know. It's going to be the most unusual interview you've ever had.
It's going to be
your
perfect.
First child co-host.
Shout out to Moses, Tamron Hall's son. He's here while we're doing this interview eating some really tasty Doritos. So if you hear him throughout this entire interview, just know Tamron's a working mom. She's giving us what I'd like to call a real look behind the scenes, breaking down that fourth layer. It's hard to be a working mom in this day and age, isn't it? Anyway, you're going to enjoy this interview with one of my sheroes, Tamron Hall.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of
that. I'm like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the greatest in sports and entertainment, connected with us. Every champion and carry champions to be a champion. A champion and carry champion, hey girl, you did it. Got a champion and carry champion and carry champion.
Greatest in sports and entertainment, connected with us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a new edition of Naked. So I am telling you, I have, as you well know, because I tell you guys all my business, moved to New York City. And I wanted to take that opportunity to do some in-studio interviews as opposed to doing them over Zoom. And I did that. I waited till I found a guest that I really knew would be very fair and honest, funny, engaging. And I found the right person, someone that I've looked up to for years. So if you hear me, you know, beginning with effusive praise, it is because I love me one Tamron Hall. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Tamron to Naked. So Tamron Hall, this is, I have to give you a story. When I usually have my guest on, I like to tell them a story of what we know and what we remember. And this is still true to this day. But I have always seen myself in you on television. You are so unapologetic about who you are.
Thank you.
And to me, that was always the North Star. And one day I was at work. And a boss came into me. He's like, "Do you see her? Do you see how she just is?" I was like, "Yes, no, I'm in love. We're already in love. I've been in love for years, and you have been nothing but generous and kind to me. And you don't have to. So thank
you." Yes, I have to.
But you do.
Yes, so I want to you. And I have to. I mean, how could anyone not support the magic that's you? I mean, you make it very, very easy. And when I say I have to, I believe that you're drawn to light. If you're lucky.
Yeah.
And I was drawn to you instantly. Mm-hmm. I saw your work. I mean, you're so gracious. You have this beautiful studio that you've set up, and you are allowing my son to crunch Doritos. Just a few. So for those of you who are listening, if you're watching, if you just saw the neck snap, that was a mom neck snap, because it's just as we were starting with the beautiful intro, there was a voice. That's not either of ours. So
it's okay.
I mean, that's why you're magical. I walked into this studio with my child who's on spring break. Who I want him to see more of what I do.
I love it.
And do you know how many other people would have panicked to watch a 4-year-old walk in with a bag of Doritos? And you recognize life, right?
Yes.
And
what matters.
What matters. Yeah. And I appreciate that very much. But as I said, I mean, watching you and watching these bold, unapologetic moves that you've made has been inspiring to me as well.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. That means a lot. I don't think that we give one another our flowers. And I also know Moses is going to be in this interview with us. By the end of this interview, we are bringing him up here, whether he kicking and screaming, whether he wants to hang out or not. And he's going to talk about these snacks.
He will. He will. And again, you know, that's the reality of life. I swear. I'm like, it's the first time I'm sure you've had a Dorito eating 4-year-old nearby. But I, as I said, I've been trying to make sure, you know, I just went on my book tour and he was with me.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And he was with me in Baltimore, and there were 800 women, mm-hmm. largely, and husbands who were dragged by those women in to see me. And I really want my kid to experience life with me. And my mother was that way. You know, my mom was a 19-year-old single mom. I went everywhere with my mom. Mm-hmm. I was her shotgun, mm-hmm. you know. And so when she worked at a leather factory when she was trying to get her degree, she took me up to Tandy Leather. And I saw all of these women sitting behind these machines, and their job was to put the rivets on the leather pants, the snaps mm-hmm. on leather goods. And, you know, that was the most important job in the world to me.
Yeah.
Like my mom, that's where my mom worked, and she's walking me through.
But that's your work ethic. Mm. I obviously am preparing for this interview, and I see that you are on a book tour, as mentioned, but day after day, it's a new city. Yeah. And I'm all like, okay, Philly, Baltimore, Connecticut. I'm like, and you're working and you're doing it and you're meeting people and you're communing with the people. All the while, I see Moses chilling, hanging out, you know, and I know you have help, but help doesn't always come in the form of sanity or moments of quiet.
Yeah.
And when you tell the story about your mother, it, to me, illustrates your work ethic. Mm. Is that where you get your work ethic from?
Absolutely. I think so. I think from my mother, I think my grandfather, who was born in 1901, who was a sharecropper.
Wow.
But every step he took with great pride. He ended up being a pit master in his career. And he, going back to, you know, work and remembering my mom and her job at that factory, I remember, you know, we would drive. Once my mom got on her feet, like she was like 20, she decided she wanted to move from the small town where we lived because her chances were better in a bigger city, like so many places. And we moved to Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. But we would go back every summer, every holiday with my grandfather. And I remember driving up in our Gremlin, or beat up Gremlin, our brown Gremlin. And we would, our first stop, you know, we'd pass my grandpa's
house.
But
who makes a Gremlin?
I don't even know.
If you guys, the kids, some kids are like the Gremlin.
You know, you have to Google Gremlin. It's like, it's with the El Camino style.
Is it a back in the day hatchback car?
Yeah, you know.
Yes.
And me and my mom and our little Gremlin, I bet it'd be very valuable right now. Ours was wrecked in the front. And we'd drive past my grandfather's house because his house was on the corner on the way to where he worked at this grocery store in the back as a pitmaster. And, you know, I'd get out and run into this little grocery store, Lee Chambers grocery store, and go see my grandfather with his apron on and the stains from, you know, the barbecue and the sauces and all of that. And he was always working very, very hard. And then on Sunday, you know, he would, you know, shed all of that and put on his Stacy Adams and get in his green Buick and his beautiful hat. And he would, you know, go into church.
Yeah.
And so I grew up around people who had phenomenal work ethic. My mother, phenomenal work ethic. She'd work at that factory and then she'd decorate cakes at a grocery store at night, all while getting her schooling and college degree and making sure that I
she had got a degree after she had you.
She went for two more years and then ultimately did not complete at all. How about this? I had the great pleasure of speaking at my mom's graduation.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. She finished everything. I guess it was about 12 years ago, maybe a little longer.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, great work ethic. My mom married the dad. I say God meant for me to have my stepfather. We never referred to him as my stepfather. He was my dad. And he went to the Army when he was 14 years old. And because he said he was waiting tables and he just couldn't stand the way people were talking to him and talking at him. And he thought, I'm going to go to the military. I'm going to join where his brothers were all in the military. And he became a career military man. He retired as a master sergeant out of Fort Hood, Texas. Wow. So, you know, I was always around people who had tremendous work ethic.
Work ethic. And so when I'm thinking, well, how do you do it all? And I don't know if we all do it all, but I think for me, especially being in the same industry and always looking up to you, you gave us a lot of freedoms. I don't even know if you realize it, but when you talked about the difficulty of having a child later in life, and then finally having this wonderful baby.
This wonderful Dorito-eating child, not very far from this microphone.
Dorito-eating child. And we better have them sponsored this daggone podcast afterwards.
Oh, my God. Let's bleep out the name said Chip, unless they pay said Chip.
Okay, Chip. Yeah. But like that, to me, those kind of stories are so interesting because on your appearance, your beauty, smart you are, intelligent you are, that can be very intimidating. Mm-hmm. And you brought in a whole new world. Made you want to share that story?
Well, I really honestly had no choice. I mean, everyone knew my age. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess if I started today, you wouldn't know your age. But everyone knew my age at 48. The show and my IVF journey all coincided. I was preparing to launch the show when the very first round of IVF took. In fact, the day we taped my pilot was the day I got the call from the hospital that it had taken. We'd had other failed rounds.
Yeah.
And I also thought it was important to show the realities of the journey, right? Mm-hmm. People throughout my career made many assumptions about why I didn't have a child. Oh, she's selfish or she don't have a man or all these things they put on
you. I hate people. Y'all get on our nerves.
No, you know, and every woman who is probably past 30 knows that there are folks, whether they are in your professional life or your personal life, who make assumptions when you don't have children over the age of 30. And so I knew all of these assumptions. And by the way, had I stayed at the Today Show, I would have been the only woman on the main cast that didn't have a child.
Oh.
Because when I left, Hoda became a mom with her daughters and her adoption journey. So, and in morning TV especially, this assumption of motherhood making you relatable was a big undercurrent.
Yep.
And I wanted to talk openly about how I felt that that was nonsense. My womanhood and my motherhood are two different journeys. I'm born into womanhood and motherhood came at 48. And they're two very different things for me.
Tell me what womanhood is versus motherhood, in your opinion.
Right. You know, womanhood are the friends that I still have who one actually said, you have a baby now. We're not going to talk as much.
Oh.
And I said, you've been my friend forever. I'm not, I'm not in this club of, right. of people who only have to have my same journey.
Yep.
My womanhood is the fact that I have the same best friend since we were 4 years old.
Wow.
Those relationships of commonality mean something to me.
Mm-hmm.
My motherhood is a very different journey in that I do have friends who, you know, I have a friend, a darling friend. She's got three kids and another has four. And I call them for the different kind of advice. But
sure.
we still talk about our life before Moses
yeah.
and before our children.
Yeah.
I said something one day and I don't think people really appreciated that I said, or some people didn't. I said, you know, I love my life with my child immensely. And I love the smell of his skin, the smell of his hair. I wake up sometimes and I can't even believe he's mine. But I also loved my life before.
Mm-hmm.
And I can picture my life, both versions of me, very clearly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love them both.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. And the thing is, what you just said, I've had this conversation with so many different women who either adopt or have mm-hmm. children later in life. There is a shame that is associated with you in society if you don't have a child mm-hmm. by a certain age or if you just never yeah. have a child. And if you don't physically, because mm-hmm. she had a surrogate, if you don't physically give birth, there's still more like,
You know, and I learned early on, so many years ago, I wrote a blog post about parenting because I ran into a rough situation. This was after Newtown.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the people around me kept saying, you know, a parent's worst nightmare. You don't understand. You don't understand. And I felt like, wait a minute. Do you believe that myself and other people who don't have children went home that day and just forgot that we watched yeah. babies be massacred, oh. right? And I was maybe in my feelings or whatnot, but I wrote a post about, you know, how we on this journey of humanity without children does not mean that we are absent from the sadness and sorrow of watching something like this. So I wrote this whole post about it and it was widely received and it was great. And I'm on a flight coming from somewhere and this woman came to me and she was tears in her eyes and she happened to be white. And she said, Tamron, that touched me to my soul. She said, I actually am raising my stepson.
Mm.
And so often at the, you know, whatever, grandparents or relatives will say, well, you don't understand. He's really not your child.
Yeah.
And she said, I clothe him. I feed him. Yeah. He lives with me. He is my child.
Mm-hmm.
And so going back to what you were saying, I noticed that people, you know, if you have all boys, they go, you don't understand unless you have girls.
Okay.
And then you have girls like, okay. You don't understand.
That's
fair. And then if you all never know if you don't have twins.
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
then it's like, well, you have one child. Woo. You don't know unless you have four, you know, and there's always a moving uh-huh. of the goalpost.
Okay.
In our lives in general, right?
Period.
It's in professions. You get your dream job. Yeah. Well, you remember. It's,
yeah.
It's always uh-huh. people want to move your goalpost. And sometimes it's to make themselves feel better, you know, but also sometimes they just don't even know what to say.
Yeah, exactly. They're just talking.
Just talk.
If you think about, let's go to womanhood in the years in which I would be like, I want all her shoes and clothes. I want everything that, to this day still. But it was always one of these affirming reasons for me to say, because when I started at ESPN, women were still wearing pantsuits. Like,
mm-hmm.
And they were always like, look at her.
When I started in reporting, same thing. I actually, you know, fun fact, was probably one of the first to wear, after Michelle Obama, around the same time, the sheath dress.
Oh.
When I got into Today's Show and MSNBC,
they weren't showing.
People were not dressing like me.
Yeah.
And I've never actually taken claim and staked my flag on that. But let me just do it right here on your show for the first time. I've never said it, but it's true.
It is a fact.
It is 100% true.
It is a fact.
And the reason why I was so defiant in my fashion, to be honest with you, is not because I thought, okay, I'm going to be, there was a tabloid report once that said I would walk into the Today Show and make every, you can actually Google, this is stunning, that I would line up the women and make them change their clothes so
oh
I could,
gosh.
It was like, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
First of all, I was the Z-list, so I'm going to make the main anchors change their clothes, but okay.
And they're listening.
And exactly. I'm like, really? But I, you know, early in my career, in the 90s, I was a reporter and there was a heat wave and I was outside in Texas, you know, those reports where you crack the egg and it sizzles, you know,
yes.
being from California. This is a heat wave. And the news director at the time, I took my blazer off and I was out in the field and he got in my ear, my IFB and said, put your blazer back on. And I said, it's 110. What are you talking about? And he goes, no one's going to take you seriously.
Oh.
And it was infuriating. And I'm like, no one's going to take me seriously because I'm standing out in this sun looking like a chocolate drop melting.
Yeah.
I mean, like it was so ridiculous. And so his notion of my credibility was in my clothing, not my words, not my presentation, not my hustle. It was that I had on a long sleeve shirt, by the way. And that's what I had on underneath. I didn't have a tank top on. I had a button down shirt, like a golf shirt, a professional shirt, and I'm taking off my hot blazer. And so my value was somehow diminished because I didn't have a full suit on. So I was very mindful after that and in my career. So it started in Chicago where, you know, like the Tribune said, you know, the best dressed anchor on TV or something. They did a whole article, and it really wasn't to be flashy. It was to say, I am going to present the way I feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. It is professional and I like it.
And by the way,
it's empowering.
It's empowering because when I saw you dress the way you were, I was like, you can dress. If you can't get over what I look like, then you didn't come here to get the news.
You didn't come here to get the news.
Yeah. So if you can't get over how you look stunning and still can deliver smart information, I don't understand how people felt that way.
I also operated within professional lines. Right. So, I mean, I recognize I'm a journalist. I'm at any given time reporting on, even now with my talk show. We pick out our wardrobe a week in advance, right? But down to my hair, we talk about what that presents. So if we're doing a show on the talk show about true crime, or, you know, if we have a more serious conversation, you know, mental health, I'm mindful. I'm not going to come out and, you know, and so, you know, it is strategic. It's not willy-nilly. I don't just go and go, oh, this would be cute.
Right.
I look at what message it conveys. Is it appropriate, right? Everything has a reason and a season. And we go that route, but it's always intentional for sure.
Hey, everybody, I appreciate you for being patient, but we have to take a quick break. Fast forward through the commercials if you'd like, but we'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Naked.
Every champion and carry champions to be a champion. A champion and carry champion and carry champion. A champion and carry champion and carry champion. Greatest in sports and entertainment. Connected with.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects and odes to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every champion they carry champions to be a champion, a champion they carry champion, they girl you did it. Got a champion they carry champion, they carry champion. Greatest in sports and entertainment, get naked with
me. Hey everybody, welcome back to Naked. Today's guest is Tamron Hall. Hope you enjoy. I think that what sometimes we don't realize when we're doing something that's when you're part of being the first, and you were the first in so many ways, it's more of a struggle as opposed of, oh, I did it.
Mm.
When you look back on your mini first in your career, do you understand how valuable they
my
are?
My son just burped. Oh my gosh.
Moses is saying,
this is the
Moses
most...
and no, he's perfect. He's okay, like, Mom.
This is the realest you'll ever see. Anything, I challenge anyone who ever talks to you on this podcast to have a child who burps during the conversation.
By the way, but this is real life. I'm a mom and I work. There's so many moms who are listening and work. Like, look, you sometimes babies just got to be here. Yeah, you know what I mean? We're going to take that, okay? Moses, you can burp all you want.
Oh, gosh.
All you want.
Oh, please don't encourage.
It's healthy.
The baby, he's a Taurus. The baby bull is in the room.
Oh, it's healthy. Yeah. when you look back on your first, Moses is a trip, y'all.
He's a whole card. Oh my gosh.
But when you look back on your first, are there any regrets? Would you do anything differently?
Oh gosh.
And the first thing that popped up is what you have to say.
Yeah,
first
you know, it's like, I really resist the word regret, right?
I get it.
There are times I wish I had different, had amassed a different knowledge, right? So knowledge is power, right?
1,000%.
And so, for example, even though I love my talk show, and it's great, I probably would have demanded more ownership of it. And that's my goal at this point now, is to own more of that show and ultimately own the show. And so that is, and that only really came front of mind for me because, like yourself, you have your podcast. Yep. This is your content. Yep. It is yours.
I own it.
I don't own the Tamron Hall show despite it having my name.
Yeah.
And I wish I'd been more conscious of that. But I was going through a lot at that time, and that's no excuse, but I was going through, you know, I just been, you know, taken off the Today Show. Harvey Weinstein, you know, was the original executive producer or partner. Now he's on trial for rape and all of this. And I'm just like, okay, we got to get this show going.
You're right? Like, whatever. Yeah, I need to get this
show going.
Yeah.
And that was something that I don't regret it. But in reflection, I wish I had the knowledge I have now. Because I would have brokered it a lot different deal. 100%.
But that's okay, because the lesson is to be learned. 100.
Well, now I'm in a good spot.
Fifth season.
Deal. How about this? No deals last forever. Always have renegotiations, and that's the great thing.
Fifth season, we're doing well.
Yeah.
You mentioned Harvey. Mm. I remember when that came out, when it was announced, before we knew Harvey was Harvey. Mm. In the distance, that relationship, what was that like for you?
You know, which is, it's so funny that I actually didn't know Harvey, so this is the incredible part of it. And everyone, and thank you for asking, because no one's ever really asked the full detail. I had come to a point where we were, I don't know, 3 months after it was announced that I was leaving. And I never got a chance to say goodbye on air. And you know how important those things are, being on air.
Yeah.
You just unceremoniously are shown the door, which is fine. And I knew I would find my footing. And I never was angry. I was never upset. I felt always like I was floating in peace in a weird way. But there was one moment where I was exhausted. people were offering, you know, they wanted to have me come in to give them the scoop of what really happened, but never. And these were like executives who wanted the scoop of what happened at the Today Show, but really didn't have anything substantive to offer me. Or, you know, one network call and said, you know, we want to know if she's available to fill in because we have someone going on maternity leave. And I'm like, what? Yeah. You know,
fill in.
No, it's like, are you kidding me? And so I was really, my energy was depleted that day. And I lived in a place not very far from where we are now in Tribeca. I went home and I vividly remember taking a shower and crying. And I was in the, just had given up. And again, for the most part, I was floating in confidence.
Yes. Right?
And then I was, that moment though, I was just depleted and I just had a series of conversations that just were, just didn't go anywhere. And my agent at the time called me and said, Harvey Weinstein has sent a note and he's asked, why the F can I meet with Tamron Hall? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's an escalation.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, I don't know if he's calling the wrong office, who he's reaching out to. And so, because it went from like 0 to 60. I'm like, what is he talking about? It wasn't as if I was not answering the call or they weren't. We didn't know. So my agent said, okay, he had a big office here in Tribeca. He wanted to meet us all. Okay. So we go into the office and it was myself and my agent, my representatives, and a couple of people were in his office. And he came out of this back room. And I only see Harvey Weinstein on TV. I'd never seen him in person. So he's got this black t-shirt on and I'm very... going back to fashion, very is it? It had like it was kind of like dirty, and I was like, "What? Harvey Weinstein coming with dirty?" But he had this huge spread of food and whatnot, and he said, "I want to show you what I've been thinking of doing." So they already edited a version of the Tamron Hall show.
Wow!
And they had photos I didn't even know I took, and he was just like, "These are the guests we will get, and this is it. I know this. You are going to change the scope of daytime." Which was music to my ears, right? I'm thinking, okay, God, someone gets me. I'm not just had a meeting where someone said to me, will you do Hot Topics and say, uh-uh. No. And there was this white older man miming, uh-uh, or whatever it's called. And I was like, so I mean, you imagine, I mean, heart is just like, okay, they're just not going to get it. And so now he gets it and it's substantive and it's really, it's all the things, all the weapons I believe I have. Great. So we started negotiating a deal of shopping this show. Soon after, he invited me to his home in Connecticut for dinner, family dinner. His family was supposed to be there and whatnot. And so I called my friend. I said, well, come with me because I don't know him. Now, I had not heard that he was an abuser. I had not heard that, but I heard he's a bully. And I just didn't want to be like, I don't know these people. I'm going all the way to Connecticut. So I took my friend who's like 6'9" with me and one of my best friends, Michael.
So when he wants all the smoke.
Right. I was like, Michael.
Yes.
And he's Greek and Armenian. I was like, he can go get you if I need to. So we go and his family's there. His children are there. Yeah. And it was a wonderful dinner. And they had movie night. And that was it. I think I was maybe saw him two more times. So I think during the course, he invited me to a fashion show, his wife's fashion line. Mm-hmm. So I think in total, I might have been in the room, never alone with him, maybe four times.
Yeah. So no real rapport.
No real rapport. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. I remember the last time I did see him, we were outside of one of the studios here in New York pitching the show. And he was very fidgety and very like distracted. And I didn't know what was going on. And I went home and someone called me and they said, I'm worried about you. They text. I'm worried about you. They are talking about the R word with Harvey Weinstein. And I wrote back, retirement. Mm-hmm. And then the person called me. Mm. And then they told me that there was going to be an explosive report that Harvey Weinstein had raped people. And I'm like, wait, what? And so now I'm spiraling back. God, how is this happening to me? The one person I partner with. I went to my last conversation with him. I went to host a domestic violence shelter's anniversary in Texas. And he called me. And it was like 3 a.m.
3 a.m. your
Texas,
time?
Texas time. It was like 3 or 4 a.m. And he said, you know, this is not true. Blah, blah, blah. And I said something to the effect of, you shouldn't be worried about what I think of you. You should be worried about what your children what they will know about you.
And what did he say?
Nothing. And that was my last conversation. And I've reached out to his lawyers to try to interview him. He is one of the people on the list. I think it is probably one of the biggest fall from grace stories in modern history, certainly.
It spawned a lot of things. The Me Too movement, which, you know, was quickly, we talked to Tarana Burke and she tried to make sure that that wasn't co-opted for her. As a Black woman, have you in this business experienced sexual harassment and felt like, I don't know if I should say anything?
More times than I would care to recite.
Do you think that there is a world in which we could ever, I have mentees, and when they come to me and they ask for help, I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell them to do sometimes. And that breaks my heart.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, I mean, listen, I feel the same way. A couple of things. And one day I'll write a memoir or something, or maybe not even a memoir. Maybe I'll write it all down and present it. Because it's painful for me to talk about, right? I've been in horrifying situations. Mm-hmm. I've had the creepy calls. I've had the same things I know you've had. I know it because it is prolific. Mm-hmm. The one thing, and I'm happy you brought up Tarana because she's fantastic and she's been on my show, that the title of Me Too being co-opted and taken from her, and then the face of victims suddenly not only became mostly white, but this certain stereotype of this young, white, blonde female in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And one of the helpless things that I often felt, and I'm sure you have felt, they won't believe me because I'm a Black woman and they don't believe Black women are targets of this. Mm-hmm.
And we're unafraid.
That we're unafraid. Like, we're too tough to be a victim.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, they don't play that with the sisters. Uh-huh. And I'm like, really? Uh-huh. You think that? And so we were somehow immune to it because our toughness was going to keep these, you know, predators away.
Yeah.
And that's just not true.
It discourages me because do you say go to HR? Well, we know what happens when you are one of a few and you go to HR. Mm-hmm. It usually doesn't work in our favor. Do you say report your boss? What do you say?
You know,
I don't know what to, it's 2024 and I'm still scratching my head about this.
So I keep extensive documentation on everything.
Good for you.
I write down
lesson
everything.
Learned.
Lesson learned. If I walk out of a meeting where I'm uncomfortable, I write every word down in that moment. I learned that from a lawyer. Extemporaneous notes. I now, though, you know, being the executive producer of the show and having 250 employees, I actually don't meet one-on-one with people anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm rarely alone in a room with anybody.
Smart.
I feel that one of the things that's going back to not regrets, but knowledge is power. I wish I had formed, like I see you all on your trip together and I'm like, well, I didn't get an invitation.
You didn't come anytime.
No, I love that. I wish I had formed like this league of women like you all have when you go on your trip and you're able to talk and you're able to share those things.
It's important.
Because I was one of one and that's no excuse, but I was so like, I got to get it done.
Yep.
And so I'm sure some people thought that I was unfriendly or quiet or to myself. I don't think people think I'm unfriendly. I think they think I'm to myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm really not. I'm actually, my house, you know, is filled. Most of my dearest friends aren't in the business. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I can look like I'm off to myself. Mm-hmm. In fact, my team said, oh, you know, what celebrity do you want to host it down? I was like, I don't have any celebrity friends. I have celebrity people who know my phone number and we call and laugh and
friends,
talk.
Yeah.
But my crew, there nobody's in this business per se. But I wish I had done more to form these alliances, being one of the first in a lot of categories. But I can tell you the day that I was leaving NBC, I called Joy Reid first.
Hey.
She was the very first person I called.
Sweetheart, right?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. And we talk all day long. each day, you know, I wish I had formed a league of women, you mm-hmm. know, or something, right? I did it in Chicago a lot. But by the time I got to New York, the intensity was like off the chart. But I used to, you know, I would have like dinner parties, or I would say, let's all get together, new restaurants, because when you're in morning TV, all the chefs come on.
Yeah.
And they always want you to come to their restaurant.
Like, be there.
And so mm-hmm. I would like have host little dinner parties at different restaurants.
Yeah.
So that is something that I wish I'd done more once I got to New York, because I needed it and I know that others needed it. Because the first 2 years I was here, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Devil's Advocate. It's with Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino.
I haven't seen it, but I know it. Yeah.
It's brilliant. So it's this, you know, he comes from this small town and it's all beautiful. And he's in New York and he's beautiful people. They're gorgeous. And they're really monsters. They're like devils.
Oh.
It's a brilliant film. And I felt that way when I first came here. I felt like, gosh, beautiful people and parties and, you know, red carpet and pop, pop, pop. And but then these people would peel their masks off and they were whole goblins.
Yeah.
You know, Prince used to call them energy vampires.
Let me tell you something. That is a word right there. That is a word. Do I have a dollar in my purse? Pass the plate. He is preaching, because it's so true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when you realize that, I will say this, I too have the same reputation of sometimes being to myself. I do have my good group of machete, shout out to my girls, but that was not of my own doing, you know? Like Jemele Hill will tell a story of how when we first got to ESPN, I was just like, hey, and just in the I was going to get in and get out.
My friends call me a social loner. In fact, Jemele was
correct.
First, we had Mexican food together.
Correct.
So it was Joy Reid and Jemele, like were the two people back to back that I spoke with.
And the two sweetest souls. Sweet, so that was perfect.
Easily. And so, my friend Sam, a social loner.
Yeah, I get it. And it's fine. But it also, it's also protection. It preserves you. It's all the things.
Every champion and carry champions to be a champion. A champion and carry champion and carry champion. A champion and carry champion and carry champion. Greatest in sports and entertainment. Connected with.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every champion and carry champions to be a champion, a champion and carry champion. And girl, you did it. Got a champion and carry champion and carry champion.
Greatest in sports and entertainment, connected with.
Before I let you go, because you've really went here and shared so many things, I back to the work ethic. I don't know when you have the time, but you are on your second book now, yes. And you have a series. You have a true crime series, you guys. I could tell you about. Oh. You've seen her. You had a true crime show MSNBC.
Yeah, MSNBC and Discovery ID. I had a show called Deadline Crime with Tamron Hall, and it lasted for 6 seasons, and I ended the show after I did a case involving a pregnant woman in Oklahoma who was killed. And that case, along with another, became the inspiration for the mystery involved with Jordan Manning, the character that I created. So Jordan is a Black female reporter who has a forensic science background. She's a reporter in Chicago. I actually named her Jordan Manning, falling asleep watching one of the sports things. I woke up, I was like, Jordan. Okay. Jordan and Manning, that's her name. But she's our protagonist, and she's a crime solving reporter. Huge heart, hugely passionate, but also in her mid-30s trying to figure out life. And so what I did with this character is bring, I hope, this compassionate, bloodhound who, if she's on the case, she's going to solve it. But you see the layers of what it's like to be a Black woman in the newsroom, what it's like to be, in this job that you love, but wanting to have love. But at the end of the day, she's a tough cookie. And this is the second in the Jordan Manning series. The first case was inspired by something I covered in Chicago, but I needed her to have the credibility. So I poured in my years at Deadline Crime, my 30 years of being a reporter, most of that crime. And then I had the luxury of fiction to create this juicy storyline. Yeah. With a very shocking ending.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote this, the first series I wrote during the pandemic, the second I wrote in New York City. We were isolated with the first one. We have a house out in Long Island. So this one has a heartbeat. It has an intensity. It's a true thriller that I've just poured my heart into.
I was Audible listening. I would like to tell you I was reading. I was not.
That's okay.
I was
trying to, our Audible sales are off the charts. Oh, yeah. By the way, you're not alone. I was like, dang, they gave me the sale numbers the other day. I was like, my God, people love it.
I loved it. I loved every moment of it. And then as I was coming in today and I was telling them, I was like, this is really good. And it's interesting because you take this character and it's loosely related to what's happened, or perhaps inspired a little bit about what's happened to your sister, and you shared the story. Do you find it is cathartic for you?
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. And I've talked about my sister being the victim of an unsolved crime. And subsequently, my work with survivors of domestic violence. And when I was writing this series, the case involves a missing mother of two. And her advocate, if you will, is her sister, Shelley. And Shelley finds Jordan Manning and pleads with Jordan Manning to help her find her sister.
Yeah.
And when I got done with the book, it was only after I got done with the book, that I realized that Shelley this time around is me in so many ways. Because we felt very helpless after my sister's death, we felt, very unhappy with the investigation and frustrated and angry and all these things that anyone would feel if a loved one was taken away in this way. And so for me, Shelley became this character, unbeknownst. It was not the intention, where you see some of what I felt and members of my family all poured into this character.
I love it. Thank you for being here. I know we ran over. Continued love, health, and wealth.
Thank you.
Cameron Hall, my Shiro in so many ways. Oh, I appreciate you being here.
And Elvis, a.k.a. Moses, has left the building.
Wow, right? Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I'm going to tell you my quick takeaways because I haven't done that in a while. The biggest takeaway, well, there were several. Thank you, Tamron, first off, for being on the podcast. But the takeaway in which I said to you, this business is tough, but all businesses deal with women addressing sexual harassment, what should you do? And she just quite frankly said, Carrie, you've dealt with it, I've dealt with it, we all deal with it. Document everything. We don't have a perfect answer for that because we are not in a perfect place and we are not in a perfect union. The society is not perfect. But ladies, pay attention. Document everything. If you ever feel uncomfortable, if you ever feel like you're in a situation where you are being abused or treated unfairly or someone is harassing you, document everything, especially in the workplace, more specifically in the workplace. And also, I want to thank her for sharing her story about Harvey Weinstein. Like, she said, no one's really asked her about Harvey. No one has really said, what was your relationship? Harvey was supposed to do her show. Could you imagine your show being attached to Harvey Weinstein and you're like, oh my God, this is it. My show is done. It's never coming out. It's over. And here she is winning on all levels. The Tamron Hall Show was in its fifth season. And to me, if that is not a message that says, keep going, continue to push, continue to strive, continue to fight for what you want, I don't know what the heck is. I would have thought my show would have been dead in the water if it had any bit of Harvey's imprint on it. He's a pariah. The stories that are coming out about him are horrific. He literally was doing a casting couch. And he knew who he could do it with, right? He knew who he could do that to. At least it seems as if he was a predator on purpose, very specific, a predator with purpose. Thank God Tamron got out of that situation. And look at her now. She's better for it. And remember, do not forget, go out and purchase book number 2 in her true crime series. It's called Watch Where They Hide. It is a crime series thriller, if you will, following the likes of a true crime reporter by the name of Jordan Manning. You can see that person, as mentioned in this entire interview, is very similar to Tamron. So I think you'll enjoy it. Watch Where They Hide, available everywhere you get your books and, of course, on Amazon. I hope you guys took some notes. Go back and listen to it again. This is a special interview. Shout out to Tamron again for coming on. Thanks to the crew at WTF Media Studios. You don't get to go outside that much. Shout out to my crew as well. We'll talk to you guys next week.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA. And I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.